Cafe this week. This is our next segment on consciousness, and today we have with us Dr. Fred Allen Wolf. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Wolf.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Eva.
And I think I've told you, this is a series that I'm doing with you and a couple of other scientists. And the first thing I'd like to ask you is, what is your definition of consciousness?
What I want to say here has to do with how I define anything. So let me just qualify. I need to qualify because to give a definition, say that consciousness is the etheric vibrations of God's mind or something like that, says nothing, even though it sounds pretty. What I'm really interested in is what we mean by consciousness in terms of what consciousness does. In other words, for physicists or for scientists, we're not interested in definitions of things per se. We're interested in definitions which have pragmatic or practical value. How do you measure it? What does it do that we can see and observe? For me, that's the role of consciousness. Consciousness is a baseboard upon which the physical universe can be constructed according to our understanding of quantum physics. So consciousness itself is undefinable, impossible to define, other than to say what it does. And what it does, as far as I'm concerned, is it brings or acts as the base upon which the physical universe comes into being. And that, I think, is a reasonable definition, and I think I can get into how and why I come to that kind of definition.
I'd actually like to know how and why you come to that, because the reason I decided to do this project was I was having a discussion with a medical doctor the other day about the Terry Schiavo issue. And I asked him what he thought consciousness was, and he looked at me like I was an idiot and said, well, the opposite of being in a coma, of course.
Well, that's a normal operational definition. It's a good definition. When you're unconscious or not conscious is when you're essentially dead, asleep, in a coma. When you're conscious, you're able to willfully, with intent, move your body around or something of that sort. That's a good medical definition. There's nothing wrong with that definition because it defines consciousness in the theater of operation of the medical field, and that's just what you're supposed to do. Physicists are similarly inclined. In fact, most people are. But if you could begin to define consciousness as being the be-all and end-all of anything from baked beans to toasted hot buns or whatever, then it becomes meaningless. So that's why. From my point of view, being a physicist, my interest has been in something we call quantum physics, which is a field of study that's based upon observing and measuring the behavior of systems of objects, small, large sometimes even, that begin to move or follow what appears to be laws that don't fit our normal understanding of the way things should move. By normal understanding, I mean what is called the classical view. Classical view refers to large-scale stuff like baseballs and dropping objects off of tall buildings and rocket ships and things of that sort. Those things move according to what are known as Newton's laws. But these other objects, these very refined measurements, indicate things don't move that way. They kind of disappear and reappear. They quantum leap. They move in ways which indicate they're occupying more than one place at one time. They do several very paradoxical things which we don't really observe, but in order to explain what we do observe, we have to understand that this other way of seeing has to be present, or the other way of being has to be present. And this is called quantum physics, and there's a whole theoretical structure of quantum physics. And the way consciousness gets into this whole game is through how it describes reality. It describes reality by saying not what reality is, but what reality may be, what its possibilities are. So quantum physics is the physics of possibility, whereas classical physics is the physics of cause and effect, actuality. So while we're dealing with quantum physics, we're looking at possibilities, and we're looking at how possibilities can even change and how we can influence and alter possibilities, kind of like a baseball player waiting his swing because he knows the pitcher always throws low on the outside when he throws. So the batter automatically adjusts his swing to hit the ball better. We're trying to hit the ball better in the quantum physics world. We're trying to find out what are the possibilities and can we take advantage of them. And that whole game then gets into, well, what does it mean to take advantage of it? The answer turns out to be that when you observe something in the quantum world, in the world of quantum physics, whatever it is that you're observing changes from being possible into something actual. So in other words, an actual event just kind of like pops into existence at the instant that it's observed. And that has been the whole bugaboo of quantum physics. It seems to bring the observer into the game of life or the game of reality, and in a very special way, which is not the way physicists thought was even necessary up to the turning of the 20th century. Now we know it's that way, and most of the devices we build are based upon quantum physics and so forth. So consciousness then becomes the ground or the field in which the observer exists. It's kind of like a ghostly field that fills the whole universe, and it vibrates and undulates, and in it are all the possibilities which can arise. It's in metaphor land, you might say it's the mind of God, or the mind of the universe, or the mind of Brahman. I mean, there are many different ways of talking about it, but it basically is that it's invisible, it's untenable, you can't grab hold of it, you can't see it, you can't feel it, because it itself is responsible for seeing, feeling, getting hold of stuff.
That's one of my questions is, do you believe that consciousness is either a frequency or a field?
It has fields and frequencies within it. In other words, it has a vibratory pattern. Because anything that comes into existence, according to quantum physics, if it has matter, then according to our understanding of energy and matter, it has to have a frequency and a vibration. So there is a frequency or vibration associated with any material object. They're very high frequencies, by the way. They're intensely high. The more massive the object is, the higher the frequency is. And that's also counter to somebody's intuition. They think, well, if I'm going to get more spiritual, I have to go to a higher frequency plane. Well, that just means you're getting more massive.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that anything exists other than thought as it relates to matter?
Do I think that anything exists? Is that what you said, exists?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the word?
Yes.
Yeah, everything exists. Matter exists. The world exists. If by existence we mean what human beings and others are capable of sensing, then
I guess I don't mean what we perceive, but what actually is.
Well, I don't know what actually is, other than what I can sense or experience.
Okay.
To say that something is that you can't sense or experience, you have to have some reason for that. And I've already indicated to you why we think there's the observer effect, and what the observer has to be is somebody that can't really be ever caught observing. It's kind of invisible.
If you agree with me that we have three levels of awareness, which would be sensate, cognitive, and self.
Sensate, cognitive, and what was the other one?
Self.
Self?
Yes. Or the self-awareness.
Self-awareness, cognitive awareness, and we can sense the world around us, we can think about the world around us, and we know we have an individual self.
Right.
So, is that what you mean?
Yes. What would you think that the minimum level of consciousness would be to be present in the world? For example, the issue of Terry Schiavo.
The minimum level of consciousness?
Mm-hmm.
That's a difficult question, because consciousness is not something which can be isolated into levels of that sort, where you say, if you have this much of that, then you are conscious, and if you don't have this much, it's not a measurable quantity in that sort of thing. So in terms of a person who's on life support, somebody who's, whether she or he is alive or dead, that's always going to be and should be a difficult question. And it shouldn't be one that could be answered by any measurement made by anybody, no matter what they say. Right now, we're using brain activity to indicate consciousness, but I'm not convinced at all that brain activity shows that one is conscious or not. In fact, almost just the opposite seems to be the case. When you're in a state of so-called, quote-unquote, less consciousness, which means in deep sleep, your brain is going like mad. In fact, your brain is more active under deep sleep than it is when you're awake. So brain activity may be when your brain is not active at all is when you're most awake. I mean, I don't know. Our minds have to rethink the problem and not use brain activity or electrical activity of the brain to indicate that somebody is conscious or not conscious. So whether you should pull a plug on somebody or not, that's always going to be a difficult decision, and I don't have an answer for that.
What is your, speaking of mind, what would your definition of mind be?
I go back to mind is what mind does, and I don't differentiate between mind and consciousness. I am aware, however, that the Buddha looked at mind as one of the six, that's S-I-X, senses that we have called the mind sense. And I talk about this in my book called The Spiritual Universe. So he looked at the mind as a sense quality, much with no more or no less value than smelling, tasting, hearing, so forth.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the mind thinks? I understand the mind to be a binary processor. Do you think that it thinks?
I don't think the mind is a binary processor. I think that's gobbledygook that probably comes from some kind of computerese language that people speak. I don't think it's binary at all. It's probably multi-rary, or what do you want to say? It's multiversal. There are many options for it. Computers that we use today, although they work with binary bits, they're far from binary. So even the notion of a binary may not make any sense anymore. So I don't think of the mind as a machine at all. I don't see the mind as an it. I don't see it as having objective qualities. I don't think mind is capable of being put inside of a body so that your mind is separate from my mind, is separated from anybody. My mind is a field of possibility, and we all have it, and so we're all part of it.
So are you saying to me that you think that thought is created within our mind and within our brain?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
The brain, it's not clear, nor are we ever going to be able to find out exactly where a thought is created, because I don't think thought is localized to be in any specific spot. It's certainly not localized in time. I mean, to have a thought, for example, you got to know what you're going to say. But how can you know what you're going to say? Because before you've even said it. So there's got to be some process in which the thought is forming well before you're conscious of the thought forming. And since you're not going to really say the thought until you put the thought out there, it makes more sense to think that somehow the thought, having been expressed, goes back in time and expresses to the expressor what to say next, kind of like a script.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. What would you believe to be the source of creativity and intentionality?
That's a meaningless question, because if I say the source is this or that, then I have to define where this or that is in terms of space and time. And I don't think this has a space-time coordination.
Okay. What would your thoughts be on manifestation of intent into physical reality? And what I mean by that is, so many times people say, I do not believe that intent is real in creating. If so, if it was, why can't I create a car in front of my face? So I'm talking about actual physical things. How do you believe manifestation of intent comes into play into physical reality?
It's the only thing that comes into play all of the time. It's in play now. It's in play in everybody's life. Everybody's using intent, whether they like it or not. Now, what people may confuse that with is the wish fulfillment thing, their fantasy world. I wish I had a sexy babe that I would come into my life whenever I open my eyes, or I wish I had a Ma, why don't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? I mean, I want to have that tomorrow. I want to look outside my house and see there. I want to fly. I want to do all these, you know, wishful things. The universe is not constructed from individual fantasy thoughts entirely. There is some fantasizing going on at a very deep level, but at the level that most people operate, which is childish fantasy, it doesn't work that way. And people have to recognize how it, if people would recognize how it really works, then they would be able to get to a deeper level in which the kind of magic they're hoping for really starts to apply. And it doesn't go by just simply, I wish it to be so. Why can't it be so? It doesn't work that way. Intent is a very deep thing. It has to do with observation, and it has to do with something called robust or strong kind of observation. It has to do with vigilance in your observational properties. You have to focus in on something, and as you focus in on things begin to shape up in the direction in which you want them to go.
Now, one of the things that I'd like to know, energy, when you think thoughts, it causes things, atoms to start oscillating in your brain.
What did you say? Thought doesn't do that.
It doesn't cause your brain to start firing?
Your brain starts firing when there's thinking going on, but, it's not clear whether the thought is causing the brain to fire. Some people may say the brain starts firing and that creates the thought. It's not clear what the causal relationship is. What we do know is that when you're sensing, thinking, smelling, etc., doing anything that involves mind, there is a firing pattern in the brain, but it's not that one causes the other. They just seem to arise together.
Do you think
mind.
That negative energy from negative thought possibly could be caused by the firing of electrons, and positive energy could be caused by firing of protons?
No, that's nonsense. None of that makes any sense. Okay. It has nothing to do with negative and negative electrical charge, and positive electrical charge have nothing to do with negativity in terms of that's a bad thing that happens to good people, or positivity, that's a good thing that happens to bad people, or whatever. It has nothing to do with that.
What is your perspective on karma?
Well, karma is part of the way the laws of the universe seem to work. That is, once things get set in motion, what seems to arise and what seems to be necessary in order to have anything physical is something called inertia. And inertia is really the universal karma. So once you start something in motion, there is this inertia which keeps it rolling more or less in the same direction in which it was set in motion. So people, by their activities, according to ancient Vedic texts and so forth, are doing things at what is called, I don't know, etheric level, something like that. This is not something I'm really an expert in, where the same karmic or tendencies of patterns to reinforce and come back into being again keep going. So that's why we keep having the same war over again, because these inertial tendencies that we've set into motion, which then shape and frame our bodies and our cellular structures and even our DNA and so forth, when that starts to happen, we start reproducing kids that want to fight as much as their ancestors did. So that's why we still have very much a three-level brain, and the basic level of the brain is pretty reptilian. And it seems to have the flight or mate basic firing pattern in its makeup, and we still very much have that in our makeup. So all that's part of what I would call karma.
Do you think that from a soul perspective that we know before we come into the physical body what the plan is for our lives?
We do and we don't. There is a certain, let's say there's a certain karmic pattern which we're given, but the actual form and shape of the life that we take and what we do with that pattern, there's still enough wiggle room so that we can affect and alter and change things. So even though there is a destiny, it's not so wired down that we're all just mechanical robots following laws that have been dictated to us by some higher power.
Do you think that karma, but say, for example, someone that's born into poverty, and they intend on coming out of that poverty with whatever way that they intend on, but they never make it. Do you think that karma plays a role in that, or you're just in this life where you are and you're going to be there regardless?
If somebody really intends to come out of poverty, they will. Because to come out of poverty requires action. And it may require an action in which certain egoic patterns have to be given up. But anybody that wants to get out of poverty can do it, provided that they can provide any kind of service to which they can get some kind of payment for. And we can all serve each other by doing things that need done, that need doing. It may not be the highest level of work we can do, but if we have our intent right, which means we're going to put into action what we want to do, not just wish for it, then anybody can do it. The problem we have is hopelessness. People give up, and I can understand why. Sometimes it's extremely hard to overcome some of the bad dealings that we each get in life. Some of us get good stuff and some of us get bad stuff. Some of us are able to do stuff with bad stuff and make our lives worthwhile. Some of us get a bunch of good stuff to deal with and we just throw it down the garbage chute. So there's no guarantee what hand you're going to be dealt, but how you play that hand and what you're going to do with it, that you can do something about. The problem one has to deal with, always has to deal with, is hopelessness and feeling of despair. And that itself can be so strenuous that it eventually overcomes one, and one becomes then in what is called victim physiology and cannot get out of it. They don't know how. They become what are called gloom addictors. They're addicted to gloom, and they don't even know it. They know it's gloomy, and they can't believe that anybody else can see anything other than gloom. I've got people that write to me telling me that that unless we do this, the world's going to come to a crashing end. And I write back and I said, it ain't going to come to any crashing end. I said, what you're saying is just your own fear. And they said, well, you have more faith in things than I do. And I said, well, I guess I do. And there are people that really just, everybody that I know that's done something with their life, I mean everybody that has done something with their life, has come from a position of hopelessness and hardship and trauma through their life. They've all come through the darkest periods to reach light. I'm talking about people that have really done something. I'm not talking about people that are given things on a silver platter. But if you see people that have achieved great things, if you see things, superstars, whatever you want to call them, I'll bet you if you get into their lives, you're going to find out they had to go through a dark period to get there.
I agree with you.
And I think that's very important to realize that if you're going through a dark period in your life right now, thank God, because you've just been chosen to achieve something great.
What about people, say, in India, the mass starvation, from their perspective? Is that a karmic thing, or is that something, a life lesson there to
learn? We have no way to judge other cultures other than through our own cultural eyes. I think it was Jesus that was said, before you start removing the blemish that you find in other people's eyes, take the boulder out of your own. Mm-hmm. And the problem is we can't do that. So we look at people in India, we say, oh, they're so poor, they're starving. And this is, my wife and I traveled to India quite often. In fact, she just got back from India. And I want to tell you, things in terms of improvement have gone up enormously. There's a billion people living in that land, and things can't run the same way as they do in our country, with only less than a quarter or nearly a quarter of that population in a much bigger area. It's a small country, relatively speaking, and there's a lot of people. And the people there have their own structure, their own spiritual belief system, their own way of dealing things. And they may not see themselves as impoverished, even though to us they would certainly seem so.
Mm-hmm. What about, excuse me, your opinion on the topic of entities? I hear people talk all the time, oh, this person is possessed with an entity and it makes them evil. What is your perspective on that?
Well, I think that it's very often the case that people who have low self-esteem but have something important that they would like to express will be infected with entities.
Do you believe entities exist?
What's that?
Do you believe they exist?
Not really. Not in the sense. Not in the sense of like you and I are existing, talking on the phone. Not in that sense. They exist in the minds of the people that are experiencing them. Certainly, as far as they're concerned, they're real. And anything that you believe strongly is real will eventually start to be real for you.
Mm-hmm.
But
what
I don't know what you mean by, you see, you're asking me questions, are they real? These are very, you know, if you don't part this, but these are very simple ways of looking at it. It's real or it ain't real. It's in your mind or it's out there. The world isn't constructed that way. The in-here world and the out-there world, although they appear very separate to our innocent-looking minds, aren't quite as separated as they might appear.
I agree with you totally, and I even stated something similar that to a woman, that it's contained within your mind, but she said, oh, if you would have seen it when I removed that entity and saw the reaction of the body, you would believe it.
I believe what she saw was real as far as she was concerned, and her way of explaining it makes perfect sense. I don't think people are stupid or make things up. I mean, there are some people that do that. But I think this is a very real way of dealing with something that you can't explain or that you can't see how to even take even the remotest responsibility for.
Do you think that the faster an electromagnetic field vibrates would mean that greater knowledge would be available?
No, that's absolute nonsense. There's nothing to do with that.
So you don't believe that information's encoded within, say, the aura of the body or electromagnetic fields?
Well, you know, there is an infinite amount of information encoded in the universe. Infinite by an infinite up to the infinite power to the infinite power to the infinite power. So what? Big deal. How are you gonna find out that information? You gotta observe it. You gotta do something with it. Otherwise, it just, well, it's there. So what? You know? Sure, there's information all over the place. There's information in everything, but you need an observer in order to make that information come into being.
Mm-hmm. Referring to David Hawkins' work in Power versus Force.
Oh, I'm not familiar with it.
Okay. Well, he's through kinesiology, he's developed or designated 11 levels of consciousness.
Well, it's something I don't know anything about, that name.
Okay.
He may have 11. Joe Smith has 25. Frank so-and-so has 3. So-and-so. Everybody has their own system of talking about things, and all powered to them.
Depending on your frequency of your consciousness, do you believe that the higher your frequency or more aware that you are of your in your consciousness, that there will be like new levels of information that can be afforded you?
No, because the metaphor is screwed up to begin with. It has nothing to do with frequency. So already we're on the wrong track. Anybody who's talking about higher levels of consciousness being higher frequencies doesn't really know what they're talking about.
How would you explain how people have sudden drop downs of a complete understanding of something then?
I don't know what that means. What do you mean sudden drop down?
Well, say you're driving down the road and suddenly you have an idea. You don't just get an idea. You get the whole picture of the idea. You get words way beyond an understanding. You get the whole picture, the whole scope of everything it is that just pops into your head all at one time, rather than thoughts slowly moving in.
Well, why do you assume that it needs an explanation? Maybe that's how thought works. I mean, maybe thought appears all at once. As I just said to you before, when we talked about one even thinks of a sentence to say, or I'm going to be writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea where these words are coming from. Why assume that they have to come in one word at a time, one letter at a time? Maybe the whole thing just pops in at once. Maybe that's the way it works. Our whole sense of what of time and thought and the timing of conscious experience, experiments have shown that what we call when and where a conscious experience takes place is probably not in accord with our common sense view.
Okay. In relation to healing and frequency machines, based on an assumption that energy is meant to be exact, say, for example, if you give a light bulb too much energy, it pops. If you don't give it enough, it's not bright enough. Do you believe that the frequency tendered needs to be exact?
No, bad metaphor, because the popping of the light bulb has nothing to do with frequency.
All right.
It has to do with the intensity of the amount of voltage and current that goes through the light bulb. It has nothing to do with frequency. In fact, the first light bulbs that were invented by Thomas Edison were direct current. There was nothing vibrating at all. Just turn the juice on and electrons flowed, and if it got too hot, the bulb burst.
All right. Do you believe a person's level of consciousness makes a difference in the frequency of one's bodily organs? In other words, would everyone's organs vibrate at the same speed regardless of the frequency?
Meaningless metaphor. Vibration has nothing to do with this in the way that you're using it. And so I don't know how I answer the question, because it's not a question that makes any sense.
All right. Atoms
to
vibrate.
I mean, it may be. Well, they do and they don't. It kind of depends what you mean by vibrate.
Well, they oscillate. Okay, they oscillate.
Well, but there's many kinds of vibrations. There are many kinds of isolations. For example, in a diatomic molecule, two atoms actually have a vibrational frequency. They squeeze in and out towards each other and away from each other. They vibrate. In an atom itself, it's not vibrating. But the electrons, clouds around it are in vibrational patterns. If you go inside the nucleus, there are vibrational patterns of the quarks and gluons and stuff inside it. There's all multitudes of different vibrational patterns associated with probabilities of observing any of the particles that we're talking about. But
what would you call the rate at which the cells vibrate in an organ?
The rate at which the cells vibrate in the organ? Well, I would say I would call it just what you said, but are you talking about sound vibrations? What kind of vibration are you referring to?
The sound vibration, that would be fine.
Well, I don't know if that's ever been measured. If it has, I don't know about it.
Because people are using Rife machines and turning them up, you know, up and down on the frequencies, and what I'm wondering is if it's turned up beyond the proper frequency of, say, a uterus. If, say, it's at 26,273.58, but they turn this thing on to 80,000. Where would the difference in energy between the 26,000 number and the 80,000 go? Would it be absorbed by other cells? Would it cause other cells and other organs to get off? What would happen to it?
If you put electrical vibrations by tying electrodes to a human body, causing the body to vibrate, you could probably electrocute or cause severe dysfunction to a body. So to me, whether that may have a healing effect even, I don't know. People have been thinking about that for a long time. I, for one, don't see that as very worthwhile science. I see that as kind of like people not knowing what they're doing and have this picture in their mind about vibration being kin to healing or something like that. But I don't think there's much real value there, in my opinion.
All right.
I don't really know what people are doing.
What is your position on free will? Do you think we have free will? And what I mean by that is, I can say that I'm going to the grocery store tomorrow at 3:00. I have free will to do that, allegedly. But I have no way of guaranteeing, no matter how much I intend on being there at 3:00, that I get there at 3:00. I can have a wreck. I mean, if Source doesn't want you to be at the grocery store at 3:00, you're not going to get to the grocery store at 3:00. You can have a wreck. You can get a phone call that keeps you there for over extended time.
Yeah, okay. So what's the point of the question?
Do you think we have free will? in physical reality.
Well, you have free will, but things can interrupt it, and then you have free will to pay attention to those things.
I believe I'm of the opinion that we're not driving the car known as the physical reality, in the physical reality as the body. I think we're kind of sitting like in a car seat behind a little yellow steering wheel like a two-year-old, and we think that we're driving this car.
There is some truth to what you say. That is something that I also have investigated. In fact, I talk about it in one of my audio CDs, Dr. Quantum Presents Meet the Real Creator You. I talk about this thing. I call it the secret elephant. That there's something willing us, which is really our, in your terminology, you might call it higher self, God mind, whatever you want to call it, that is really directing which way we go, and then we find out about it, and then we think we're the one that thought of doing that or going in that direction, when actually we're just following the way our unconscious level has led us, and then think that we're in control. I make a model of it. Think of this, that we're each riding these huge elephants, and we're the little guy on the back of the elephant with the little, wearing a dhoti and like a diaper and a little stick, and we tap the elephant's ear and it turns to the right. We tap the other ear, it turns to the left. And actually the elephant's already turned to the right, and then we tap the ears of the right ear and we say, we're making the elephant turn to the right when it's already made up its mind. So it seems more like that because, unconsciously we seem to be moving in the direction we want to go in before we become conscious of making the decision that we're moving in the direction we want to go in. And there's been enough evidence that show that the time delay between when we start doing something and when we become aware of it could be as much as a second of time, which is quite long on a time scale of the brain operating.
Do you believe that we exist in parallel universes simultaneously?
Well, yes and no. It depends on how we mean that. The parallel universes we exist in simultaneously are all coincident with the one we're in right now. They're not on the other side of the universe. They're everywhere at once. And what we see as a single universe is really an overlap of many parallel universes which happen to coincide enough to get some stability. I think in my mind, and I've written about this in a book called Parallel Universes, I try to look at how that might take place and how that may be responsible for how matter comes into being in the first place. But that's all speculation on my part.
Do you think that we exist in parallel universes as physical and numerous physical bodies, or that it's in pure consciousness?
It's the body you're in right now is an overlap of parallel universes of consciousness, and matter would arise as a result of that overlap. So in other words, what you see as matter isn't real either. It's really just temporary overlaps of mind stuff. So the material universe arises out of overlaps of mind stuff. We're all in the mind, all in mind stuff, and quantum physics is the physics of these overlappings that seems to take place, and that's where the parallel universes comes in. That, by the way, is speculation. I don't really know, or can I prove that by any physical experiments.
Do you think that we have access to the information in the parallel universes?
Yeah, of course.
And how do we? Can we access that as we stand and normal everyday activity, or do you think that has to be done through REM sleep or some other mechanism?
Well, it depends on what information you're after. Most
your
of us
existence.
Want information that's going to help us get on with our day's life. But if it's information of a different level, then altering what you're paying attention to will certainly alter what you're able to pay attention to. So certainly in deep sleep, lucid dreaming, or in meditative states, or when you're driving the car down the freeway and not thinking about it, about your life's troubles, you may be able to access information or have information come to you simply because you've redialed your radio mind. Most of us think of our mind, or one common model of the mind is the mind's like a radio receiver, and we simply tune in to what we want to. That was very popular when radio first got invented. Everybody's talking about radio mind, and the mind is like a radio and so forth. It's not a bad metaphor. But what I would have you consider is, what happens if you have your tuner arranged in such a way that it's not tuning just a single station in, but suppose it's tuning in a whole bunch of neighboring stations at once. Now, what are you going to be hearing? Well, it might be kind of like, you know, those people that hear sounds of people that passed on by playing tape recordings backwards and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You might be getting a whole bunch of stuff come in, which you have to sort through in order to figure out what's going on. I think there may be some interesting quantum models of that, which I'm currently interested in and have been looking at.
Would that be contained in frequencies?
Well, in the case of a radio, they'd be different frequencies. And the question of what distinguishes one station from another could be energy, could be frequency, it could be some other thing. I mean, it doesn't have to be energy frequency, but it certainly could be.
Do you think that we live in a world of duality, but that in actual existence it is non-dual as far as consciousness is concerned?
Duality, or the distinguishing of one thing from another, and the existence of the universe seem to be equivalent. In other words, you can't have the experience we're having without duality. So duality is a necessary consequence of there being anything at all.
But would the state of non-duality be the pure consciousness of other is that we're actually...
In the state of non-duality, there's nothing. There's just oneness.
Exactly.
There's no distinctions. If there's no distinctions, there's no information, because there's no informer or an informee. There's no if, there's no and, there's no but, there's no anything. It's just oneness. Oneness is impossible to imagine. It's
without something to equate it to.
The
yin and the yang, the opposites. Yeah, I see your point.
Well, if they're still opposite, then there's not oneness.
Right. I mean, I guess what I'm saying, you're right. I mean, we'd have to have some comparison for it to be other than oneness.
And the minute you start comparing it, you have two-ness.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that past and future lives exist, or do you believe they all occur simultaneously in maybe parallel universes?
Well, they all occur parallel. They all occur all the time. They're constantly there. It's sort of like our lives are film strips or bubbles in a chamber or whatever, stretched out in some great cosmos somewhere, and we dance around in them, and our dance is called time. If you want to read more about this, I've written a book called The Yoga of Time Travel, which deals with such ideas as that.
You've got several books. Why don't you tell
12.
Me all of those books? Because I've read 4 or 5 of them, and I think that they're brilliant. But maybe you can share them with the listening audience. So
well,
they can...
I'll start with the latest. My latest book is a little book. It's called Dr. Quantum Presents, a little book of big ideas. And the purpose of the book is to give you something that you put in your hip pocket or in your purse when you're going somewhere and you got time to read, like on a bus or something. And then we want to get a little hit of Dr. Quantum's wisdom. You will read things that will excite you and uplift you and give you some interesting things to think about. So that's Dr. Quantum's little book of big ideas, and that's just out. It came out a couple months ago, and it's still out there in the marketplace. And if you want to listen while you're driving in your car, there's 2 audio CD sets out. There are also Dr. Quantum Presents. There's Dr. Quantum Presents Meet the Real Creator You, and Dr. Quantum Presents A Guide to Your Universe, something like that. I can't remember the exact title, but something of that sort. Then there's going backwards through this. The next book just before that was The Yoga which I think would be interesting to read. Then there's Matter into Feeling. There's Mind into Matter. If you go to my website, all my books are listed. I've got 12 of them and two CDs.
What is your website?
So it's fredallanwolf.com. That's FredAlanWolf.com. FredAlanWolf, 12 letters.com. Spell it every way, it's as simple as you can. Nothing complicated.
I have one more question because we're just about out of time. But
okay.
Most people that I've found on the path of seeking have had some kind of dark night of the soul or a near-death experience occur sometime in their life. What put you on the path of seeking?
Of what? Of seeking?
What I called seeking. You know, at some point you began knowing that there was something else.
Knowing
other than
something
what?
Else.
You know, knowing
I don't think I've ever
picture.
Thought anything different. I've had, as I said, a number of traumatic incidences in my life, and I talk about them to some extent in my book, The Eagle's Quest. So I've had, things which have kind of awakened me from torpors of self-indulgence and pity.
I know that one.
and I do write about them. I do share them in my books. And The Eagle's Quest is a semi-autobiographical tale of what happened to me when I began to go into the shamanic world and investigate what those guys were doing in various parts of the world. And as a result, was going into myself at a deeper level that where I had to confront my own goblins and gremlins and bad guys and good guys that all made up me.
You know, many people will deny or completely not understand what we're talking about when we talk about understandings of oneness and non-duality and simply I am is all there is. Do you think, you know, a lot of people have sudden shifts like I did, where one day you, well, for example, for myself, I went to bed one night thinking that you either died and went to heaven or hell, or, I mean, went to hell and burned up in fire, that, or you went to heaven and lived in a castle. And suddenly, after a near-death experience, I understood that it was not that way at all, that there was oneness. Do you think that, what do you think causes that sudden shift in consciousness of understanding?
Well, I don't know what caused it in your particular case. I can suggest to you what happens in many cases where people have a sudden shift of awareness. They have an awakening experience, which is what I would say you had.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, in many cases, it's due to some traumatic event. Somebody dies who's very close to you, and you suddenly question everything that you believed. One of my friends, a physicist who just lost his wife, suddenly was turning to me, and he used to think whatever I said was kind of nonsense because I'm into the spiritual, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. which means wacky. And suddenly his wife dies, and suddenly starts reading me and says, you know, what you're saying makes sense. And so something traumatic happens to people that are very materialistic, and they suddenly realize that they're going to die. Oh, my God, what am I going to do now? And when they start realizing that death is right next door, they start to look for other answers. And it's that point where the things that I've been working on for the last 20 years or so start to make some sense.
Do you think the soul continues to exist?
The soul has never been out of existence, so it doesn't continue because it never gets out. It's always there. You and I are part of the one soul, and we begin to realize that more. We certainly will realize it upon death, at that point where you suddenly begin to merge with the one soul and you see yourself as you truly are. Then you begin to go through the process of reintegrating or going back in. And there's some choice in the matter, depending on how conscious you are about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide to do it unconsciously, well, you know, then you're takes your chance. You may come back in as a horse or a horsefly.
So we're really, I know you've got to go. Is there anything that you would like to leave the listeners with before we go?
Just basically one thing. The universe is a mystery, and you are as mysterious as it. So don't think that you got all the answers. Don't even think that you don't have all the answers. Just enjoy the experience of life. It's going to be over very fast. I don't care how old or how young you are. When you look back upon your life at any moment, it's going to just appear as if whenever you were at that age was just like yesterday. So enjoy this experience. And if it's very hard for you right now, even enjoy that because it's going to be over fast. And next time around, you don't know what you're going to be. So enjoy the experience. Unless you do know what you're going to be. In that case, you can enjoy it even more.
Thank you, Dr. Wolf. I'm grateful for your time and your effort.
You're
Please
welcome.
Come back and be with me again.
Thank you, Eva.
Agape to you.
Agape to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.